So starting with the understanding of the Buddha as someone who had his own struggles, who had his own process of trial and error on the path. When he was just the Bodhisattva, as he refers to himself, when I was just the Bodhisattva, and I was still learning my way. And then he goes on to tell of many difficulties that he put himself through, really. So he learned meditation from some of the great meditation masters of his time, but found that he would arise from those meditations and still hadn't found peace in his heart. Not the lasting peace that he was looking for. And so then he tried various kinds of control. He tried to control his mind, for example, and he talks about using the mind to crush the mind, and how he would clench his teeth and he would sweat on his sit in his on his seat from the effort that he was making to crush his mind with his mind. And that again worked to some extent for short periods of time. He could eliminate the difficulties, but then they would come back. And so then he tried control of the breath, extreme control of the breath, holding his breath until he said it felt like his head was going to split. And of course, that doesn't work either, right? Bringing more suffering to your suffering doesn't actually work as a way of resolving the problem. And then he tried fasting, extreme, extreme fasting. This very extreme form of asceticism where he was taking very, very, very little food to the point of almost to the point of death. But again, that wasn't the solution to dukkha. That was not the solution to dukkha. And so there comes a point, the Buddha came to a point, the Bodhisattva at that time came to a point where he had to reflect on what he had been doing. So he took a pause from the practices that he had been doing, and he reflected on those practices and on the whole of his life to some extent. And in that moment, then he remembered a time where he'd been in the field with his father, and he'd sat under a rose apple tree. And he'd experienced a deep, deep joy, a bliss, and a peace of mind. And he says, sitting in the cool shade of the rose apple tree, I entered upon and abided in the first jhana, accompanied by applied and sustained thought, with rapture, great joy, and pleasure born of seclusion. And then he asked himself, could that be the path to enlightenment? And he says, he's telling this to this very, very cheeky ascetic from another tradition who had been asking him questions, said, then following on that memory came the realization. This is the Buddha speaking now, the one who's already awake and reflecting back on his experience. Then I realized that is indeed the path to enlightenment. So having turned away from the relentless pursuit of certain kinds of sense pleasures, and having turned away from mortifying the body or trying extreme methods of control of the body and the mind, he came to understand that what he needed in his practice was balance, that he needed to be able to bring both a kind of discipline and the joy. And bringing those two together, that was the path forward to freedom from dukkha. That was the path all the way beyond control, beyond joy, actually, even in the end, to absolute peace, to complete understanding of the nature of a human life and of all life, really. So the Buddha tells this to this questioner and to us by extension across the millennia, that it's by bringing this balance to our practice that we can actually begin to make progress toward clarity. Toward a clarity of the heart mind that cannot be described. Nibbana. And in fact, there's a very interesting sutta in which somebody says to the Buddha that his disciples, his students, are addicted to pleasure, that they are on the wrong path because they're so addicted to pleasure. And the Buddha replies, yes, they are addicted to pleasure. They're addicted to the pleasure of the first jhana and the second jhana and the third jhana and the fourth jhana and the immeasurable meditations. And that is their road to enlightenment. And that, I believe, is part of the message of the four protective meditations. For us to begin to find some balance, the courage to face the difficult or the unpleasant or the harsh realities of life, and the inspiration and joy of the highest aspiration as well of a human life. And because the Buddha went through all of these difficulties and emerged with such a profound teaching, such a profound, wise, kind, compassionate presence, then people trusted him. So Ayasanchitita told us a tiny bit of the story of Venerable Patachara, Terry, but I want to tell you a different story, a story of another woman who also experienced loss and came into an encounter with the Buddha. And this is the story of Venerable Kisa Gotami. She became venerable, but she was in the beginning Kisa Gotami. And Kisa means kind of haggard or kind of thin and unattractive and unkempt. It's not a very kind word. But Kisa Gotami was someone who wanted very much to have a family. And so she did find a man, and they fell in love and they were happy together. But as sometimes happens, they lived together with his parents, and his parents didn't appreciate Kisa Gotami for any number of variety of reasons. We can't, I won't go too much into that or speculate on that, but they had a difficult relationship until Kisa Gotami gave birth to a son. So she had a baby boy. And this really brought the family together, and her husband's parents were thrilled to be grandparents. Apparently, they were very happy about the baby boy, and this kind of mended the relationships a bit, and they were happy for a little while. But then the child died. This baby boy died. And Kisa Gotami went through an incredible amount of grief and pain, and no doubt some fear also about what this would mean for her and her household now. And it pushed her to the brink. It pushed her to the point where she, as she describes herself, was wandering in the streets carrying the body of her child, her dead child, crying, unable really to accept the finality of this loss. And so she was going around asking people to give her medicine for her baby boy so that her baby boy could get better. And you can imagine that people would shake their heads and say, no, no, he's not going to get better. There's no medicine for him. But then one person, one very compassionate person about whom we don't really know anything, much of anything, said, you could go see the Buddha. The Buddha is the great physician. And you could go see the Buddha and ask the Buddha if he could give life to your baby boy. And so she did that. So she came into the presence of the Buddha, and she said, please give me medicine for my child so that my child might live again and be well again. And the Buddha saw again with this incredible knowledge that he had, this incredible sense of understanding the hearts and minds of the people that he encountered. He saw what she was going through. And so he said to her, he said, go and bring me, I will give you medicine for your child, but you must first go and bring me a mustard seed. Mustard seed specifically from a house where there's been no death, where the people have never been touched by death. And so she said, okay, she's willing to do anything to bring the baby back. She said, okay. And so she started walking from house to house in Savatthi. And she would come, and she would come to the door, and she would say, could you please give me a mustard seed? I need this for some medicine for my child. Can you give me a mustard seed? And the people would say, yes, yes, of course we have some mustard seed. That's a very common thing in Indian cooking. People would have some. And then she'd say, but only if you've not been touched by death in this home, will it work for this medicine? So I can only receive it from you if you haven't been touched by death in this home. And they would say, oh no, my goodness, no, we've lost our parents and our grandparents and the generations before. Of course, we've experienced death in our family. And then she'd say, okay, I have to go on to some other home. And she did this over and over again, right? Over and over again, walking from place to place, carrying the body of her deceased child, encountering these people who over and over again were saying, yes, we too have been touched by death. And so she eventually understood. She says in her description of this, she says, oh, I regained my mindfulness. I understood. And so she buries her child and she goes back to the Buddha. And so the Buddha gives her a teaching at that time, and he says, better than 100 years of living, not seeing the arising and ceasing of all things, is one single day lived seeing the arising and ceasing of all things. And so this sparked her faith in the Buddha, and she went forth. She became a nun. And then through her continued practice with the Buddha and with his teachings, she became an arahant. She awakened. She had that same release from greed, hatred, and delusion that the Buddha himself had experienced. And so what I find really beautiful, there are many, many beautiful aspects to this story, but the reason that I'm sharing it with you today is because what I find really beautiful about this story is that Kisa Gotami came to the Buddha with hope and with enough faith, probably not much faith because she didn't know him at that time, but with enough faith that she was willing to give his instructions a try. And what did he do with that faith and that hope that she placed in him so strongly that meant everything to her, trying to bring her son back? Right? He didn't use it as a way to make himself greater. He didn't need to be greater. He turned her back on her own capacity for understanding. He gave her a practice by which she could take in that teaching directly in her own lived experience. And this is true for all of us. The Buddha has given us teachings by which we can discover for ourselves in our own lived experience the reality that they point to. The efficacy of this path. The incredible beauty and joy of it. And the sobriety of it, the acknowledgement of the truths as well. Those difficult truths. So I invite you to think about this when you see in the news, for example, someone who loses a child or a family member or someone in your own experience or someone in your neighbor's family. Just the day before yesterday, we found out that one of the plumbers who's been here before and worked in the house died. And it came as kind of a surprise. We weren't expecting that. But that was the time. That was the time for Tim. So when you see various kinds of suffering in the world, or I could say it this way, when I see the suffering in the world, the suffering of various kinds of loss, the suffering that comes from identification, so many kinds of suffering, I think, oh, yes, the Buddha would have a teaching for them. The Buddha would have a teaching for this one, for that one. The Buddha would have a teaching for that situation. The Buddha has a teaching for us, for me, when I experience that loss, when I experience that confusion in my life. And I invite you to think about that, to bring Buddha Nusati, the recollection of the Buddha, right there into your own life, into your own world, and reflect on the teachings that the Buddha gave. Right there to your own heart. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.